to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Kate Pullinger. Kate is the award-winning author of 7 novels, as well as short story collections. She's also created prize-winning digital projects, including network novels, games, and software. So welcome, Kate.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. So why don't you start by telling us a bit more about you and your writing background, because it's so diverse.
Yeah, well, I've been writing and publishing for a long time now, since I was in my mid-20s. So my first book came out, you know, more than 20 years ago. And that was a book of short stories. And then, you know, so just writing fiction, writing novels, writing short stories. But in 2001, I was asked to teach a creative writing course online, which I hadn't done before. And through that process of learning how to teach online, I discovered that I had an interest in and an affinity with the sort of online world. I found it an interesting and good, useful place to teach creative writing, in fact. And that teaching led to a fellowship with Nottingham Trent University and Trace, which was a really sort of groundbreaking writers' community for people who were interested in the sort of intersection between creative writing and technology. So I had a whole year to look at and think about new ways of telling stories using the new technologies. That was 2002. So since then, my own writing has gone down this sort of dual parallel path of continuing to write novels and short stories, but also creating works, collaborative works, most of the time, of digital media that use stories, but also use image, games, music, videos, animation, etc., to tell stories.
Well, no, that's fantastic. And you have an award-winning novel, The Mistress of Nothing, which I wanted to particularly talk about, because a lot of my readers are, you know, well, they're all writers, but a lot of them do the historical novels. So I wondered if you could maybe talk a bit about effective research for historical novels, and also where the line into fiction with historical figures is.
Well, The Mistress of Nothing, although it was my 6th novel, I think, it was the first novel that I wrote that was entirely a work of historical fiction. I'd written other novels that had contemporary storylines with historical storylines interwoven, but this The Mistress of Nothing is a full-on historical novel. But it's also a literary novel, and publishers in the UK and Canada published it as a literary novel, whereas in the US it was published as a historical novel. That in itself is quite an interesting thing. But, you know, that novel took me 12 years to write.
Oh, wow.
I had to abandon it several times. And I wrote 2 other books during that period, as well as a number of digital fiction projects. But it did take me 12 years. And I think that was because I had to do a mountain of research. Mm. It's set in Egypt in the 1860s. So there were so many things about that particular world, that particular time, that I didn't know about. I even attempted to learn Arabic. I took 6 months Arabic lessons. And then for me, one of my frustrations as a reader of historical fiction is sometimes I feel that the writer has worked really hard on that research and feels absolutely compelled to get every single thing they've found out into the novel. And as a reader, I don't like that. I prefer a sort of more economical, pared-down style. So a lot of what kept, you know, what a lot of the, why the reason why it took me so long was finding the right voice and finding the right way to assimilate the research into the story and sort of leave the research behind and find the right way to tell the story. So it wasn't easy. And the novel I'm writing currently is set in present day, actually a couple of years in the future. So I'm for the time being, I'm leaving historical fiction to one side.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. I got a couple of subsequent questions from that. So you said that in England it was a literary novel and America it was a historical novel. Now, I mean, I find a lot of these differences quite arbitrary because clearly it is a literary novel, but it's also historical. What do you think about these boundaries between literary fiction and genre fiction?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and I think it's frustrating, and certainly as a writer, it's something I've always found rather baffling. Why are some books perceived to be commercial and other books aren't? I mean, in some genres, it's absolutely clear why, but certainly historical fiction is definitely one of those genres where it can be both obviously both literary and historical. And the fact is that many novels are historical novels, even if they're just set 20 years in the past. So it's something that I find sort of baffling, but at the same time, it was interesting to see what the Americans were doing, because one of the things that they did very effectively, Simon & Schuster in the US, was target the historical fiction community online, which is vast, as you know, and dedicated to reading. Mm. Very, a lot of really heavy readers of historical fiction. So they, you know, they were quite effective with trying to get to them through the blogs, through you know, all kinds of online forums, etc.
Mm. So can I then ask, did it sell better under a historical novel label than a literary label?
I don't know that, because that is skewed, but because it won this very big prize in Canada. So in Canada, it sold extremely well. Mm. So it's hard to draw any conclusions about that because of the influence of the prize. So I don't really know, to tell you the truth. Mm.
Okay. And then the other thing was the 12-year thing. You know, I know some people do take a very long time to write books. Were you working on that, like, full-time for 12 years? Do you think length of time affects quality?
I wasn't working on it for the full 12 years. I wrote other books. I had a couple of kids. I wrote digital fiction projects, et cetera, et cetera. No, I did keep abandoning it, leaving it entirely for a year or two at a time, and then returning to it. Mm. I think it's interesting, the thing about how long something takes you to write. Mm. Some writers write very quickly, others write very slowly. It's quite a personal thing. But I always, when I teach creative writing, I always try to tell my students that speed is not a virtue, and that things generally do improve if you have the time to put them to one side and then return to them. That is when you can return to your work with a greater objectivity. And it's really the whole thing about being able to be objective about your own work that I think that the passage of time can really help with. Mm. But I also think it is possible just to write too slowly. I mean, I was so sick of The Mistress of Nothing by the time I finally finished it. So that was ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm also really interested in how much you're involved in transmedia projects, and, you know, also what you've produced as well as what you teach. What do you think the opportunities for writers are in this transmedia space?
Well, I think they're vast, and I think they have been for the past decade. And I've continued to be slightly amazed that more established writers aren't moving into that field more quickly. I just think that the new technologies do give us new ways to tell stories. They give us new ways to connect with readers. They give us new ways of finding audiences. But they, like I said, they also give us new ways to tell stories. And for me, that is the most interesting thing. What happens when you put text on a screen? What happens when you add some other media to that text? What does it mean for storytelling? How can it enhance storytelling? Or indeed, what do you lose if you add other media in? And I think that for me, it's never been an either or thing. It's the world, there's enough room in the world for lots of different kinds of stories. And I, for one, find it exciting and challenging to work on transmedia or cross-media projects. I also really, really like collaborating with other people. For me, the sort of solitude of writing prose fiction is very well offset by collaborating with other people on these other types of projects.
Mm. I can see that. And I was actually going to, you know, ask there, are other authors afraid of this because they think that they have to know all the technology side?
Absolutely. No, the technology is definitely a barrier. But I took a decision early on in 2002 when I first started looking into this area. I was given some sort of basic training. I can do some basic HTML. I know how to create a web page, etc. But I have no interest in that.
Mm.
And I sort of took the decision early on that I am not a web designer. I'm not interested in the hardcore technical side of things. And if I was going to work in this area, I would have to work with other people who do have those skills. And that's the road that I've gone down. But I think for a lot of people, a lot of writers who are used to working by themselves when it comes to the actual getting the pages down, the text, you know, getting the words down on the page, that is a barrier. So part of what I've always tried to do when I talk about these projects is just to reinforce how, you know, working with other people can lead you in new and interesting directions.
Mm. No, absolutely. It seems to me that a lot of the publishing industry think it just means doing an app and that apps are bad, therefore everything else might be bad. Do you see it's been kind of lumped in that way?
I think that traditional publishers haven't really thought very much about how the technologies can bring us new ways of telling stories. I've on and off over the last decade, I felt tremendously frustrated by that. But at the same time, I can sort of understand it. That's not what they're about. They're about books. They're, you know, whether it's an ebook or a bound book, that is what they're about. And I do think that the most interesting transmedia, cross-media, digital fiction projects, whatever you want to call them, are coming from other spheres. They're coming out of gaming. They're coming out of web design. They're coming out of individual artists. There's a big world out there of people who are engaged in these kinds of projects, but they don't really intersect with traditional publishing at all.
Mm.
Now, the interesting thing about my digital fiction projects is that they are essentially self-published. That's what they are.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So you are, you know, you're inside the industry, you're, you know, literary fiction author amongst many other things. what do you see as the challenges for in 2012? I mean, we've seen a lot of disruption. You know, what do you see as kind of happening this year?
Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, I'll be interested to see. In 2011, there have been some interesting experiments with that traditional publishers have done with basically trying to think about social media and new media as ways to market their books. And I'll be interested to see if they try to move a little bit further into the realm of interactive work, interactive fiction at all. I mean, that for me, That remains an interesting question to observe, an interesting thing to observe, just to see if that happens. And I think that it's a very overheated world, the world of publishing at the moment. And I think that the whole business about whose territory is it, all the arguments surrounding Amazon in particular, will continue to play out this year and play out in the UK as well as in the US and Canada and the rest of the world. And that's very interesting to observe.
Mm. And as you're Canadian, but you're based in England and you also have, connections in the States. What do you see as the difference between the UK market to the US? Most of my audience are in the US, but, what do you see as the difference?
I don't really know. I can't really make generalizations about that, apart from the very obvious thing, of course, that the U.S. market is so much bigger. That sort of came home to me with the publication of The Mistress of Nothing in the U.S. And also the U.S. is still slightly ahead in terms of digital adoption and all of that. I think that what's happening in libraries in the three countries, Canada, the UK, and the US, is very, very different in each country, and that the fate of libraries is an interesting one, specifically to do with the digital realm, quite apart from closing down buildings or whatever, but the whole business of what is a library in the 21st century is a very interesting question, I think.
No, definitely. And then a lot of my audience are very, you know, pro-indie. A lot of them have gone indie, but a lot of them are also traditionally published. And I wondered, you know, as you know, you're in there, do you have any tips for people who still want to get into traditional publishing? You know, what is the best route? Because, you know, everywhere I go, people are saying, oh, it's much, much harder these days, you know.
Yeah, I think it is all more difficult these days, you know, for such a variety of complex reasons. I think that if you are an indie publisher, one of your primary concerns has to be that your book has to be as professional as possible. It has to look good. It has to be beautifully copy edited. It has to work within the format, the electronic format that you're publishing in. All of that is very, very important. And that if you haven't got that right, you're doing your work a disservice. I just think that I think that really at the end of the day, the most important thing is for your writing to be as good as possible. And for your writing to be of interest to readers. And it's easy to say that, but that is actually something that's impossible to predict. And that's why the publishing industry itself is such a weird industry, really, because it's all to do with taking risks on books that in actual fact nobody has any idea whether or not they'll sell, unless, of course, you're talking about Stephen King or somebody, you know, somebody who's massive and very well established in that way. But certainly with most books, even books that publishers think of as big books that they pay a chunk of money for and throw a lot of money at, it's completely unpredictable how they will actually do. And that's part of what makes it interesting. But also, if you work within that industry, certainly if you put your money into that industry, that must be a source of great sort of frustration. I think very risky business, really. However, there are plenty of people clearly making money from publishing at the same time. I, you know, visit my Simon & Schuster on Avenue of Americas in the US and in New York City in their huge building. Penguin in London, you think the same thing. Somebody here is making some money.
It is a good point. And I mean, there has been a lot of change, but the big guys and a lot of the small guys have not disappeared. So this is, you know, it's still a viable market. So you said there, obviously, about improving your writing. And I mean, I totally agree. And I told you before, I went on a Guardian weekend and, you know, learning more about this stuff. And a lot of writers email me, and I don't have any opinion on this, really, is that, you know, should they get a master's in creative writing in order to be a proper writer? Or, you know, do they need to do that whole type of degree, or are there ways they can improve their writing in ways that are not so expensive and time consuming?
Yeah, no, I definitely do not think that you have to do an MA at all. The advantage of doing an MA is if it's a good one, you spend 1 or 2 years really being serious about your writing. That's a very, very good thing. Also, if it's a good MA, they will have industry links, you know, so you'll be able to meet people and talk to people in the industry via a good MA. However, at the end of the day, it all comes down to whether or not the writing is good enough, whether or not the writing appeals to people. So it's an interesting thing. I mean, I think that the whole thing about MAs and creative writing is kind of double-edged. It's a kind of self-fulfilling industry in a way, but at the same time, I think that it does, you know, like I said, it gives you time to think about writing, and it also gives lots of writers jobs as well, which is not a bad thing.
But what are some of the other ways you would suggest people improve their writing if they don't do a degree on it?
Yeah, well, you know, I think on a very basic level, the best way to improve your writing is by writing as much as you can, by experimenting, by trying new things, and just persisting, putting the hours in, putting the time in, the graft that's required is a big part of it. I also think that reading is incredibly important to writing, particularly if you write in a genre. You have to know your genre inside out. You have to know what's currently interesting readers in order to stay abreast of that. And it can, you know, it is really, really useful to find some source of constructive criticism, constructive feedback. That is one thing that MAs professionalize and offer, should do at any rate, offer that as a good service. But equally, if you can do that through working with a mentor, through working with some kind of freelance editor, or indeed, if you're very lucky, you'll have a writer's group who will offer that to you. But that's actually really quite hard to find. It's quite hard to find a group of people who are like-minded and serious enough that works.
Absolutely. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you was, like, the difference between someone like me. So I'm like, I've written, you know, like one book, and it would just, my second book's just come out as indie. But I feel like I'm so junior, and I just wonder what the psychology of being a professional writer after 20 years is. You know, what it seems such a big gap. You know, can you give any tips to people about becoming, you know, having a career as an author? What do you have to change in your mindset?
It's, you know, it's not really a career. That word doesn't really work for me, because the fact is that each book, each new project, has its own set of challenges and problems that are almost always different than the ones before. And the terrible thing is that I don't really think writing gets easier. I think that you learn more about your own strengths and weaknesses. And you can improve that way. And indeed, of course, people's writing can get better. But each book, each project is different. I think for me, the thing that really would set apart a sort of professional versus I don't know, what am I going to, you know,
amateur,
emerging writer, would be just to do with dedication, really, just to do with putting in the hours and doing it. It's very easy to not write. It's very easy to think about writing and to want to write. But actually doing it isn't easy, and requires, you know, requires fortitude. and you know, all writers that I know have setbacks, absolutely. Have things go wrong, have books that go badly wrong, don't sell, books that are sold in the wrong way. You know, everybody I know, with probably the only exception being somebody like Margaret Atwood, everybody else has bad times as well as good times. And I mean, you know, you have to be so self-motivated. I think that's one of the obstacles that a lot of people come across, a lot of people who want to write as opposed to actually writing. That's the, you know, the thing about just being motivated enough to put in the time.
No, that's really helpful, actually. Thank you for that. Right, so before we go, maybe you could just tell people a bit more about your books, and if they're interested in, you know, in reading some of your fiction, what they can expect.
Well, you can find my books and information about me on my website, which is katepullinger.com. I've written a big array of different kinds of fiction projects. And a bunch of the digital fiction projects are on my website under the digital work page. So you can go and have a look at, you know, have a go with something like Inanimate Alice, which uses multimedia to tell a story alongside text. The Mistress of Nothing, if you're interested in reading a book, is probably a good place to start. And there's an email address on my website, so people can contact me if they feel like it. So yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Kate. That was brilliant.
Thanks, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.